they like to do their own thing. And then on the other hand, they actually really wanted the structure. It really gave them a sense of boundaries with their time. And for a lot of them, they got back a lot of time just by having some simple policies and procedures.
You're listening to Menders with clinical psychologist and leadership consultant, Dr. Nicola DePaul. Each week, get a dose of real-world inspiration from free-thinking leaders, top clinicians, healthcare innovators, and myself. Looking for quick fixes or standard management tools? Try someplace else. Motivated to maximize the resilience and diversity of your team, sustain your momentum as a leader, and transform your healthcare system? Welcome to Menders. Well, welcome back to Menders. Today we have Dr. Nicole Torrence. And Nicole, you're a training director in a large healthcare system. And you and I actually worked together for several years now, several years ago. But I'm so delighted and honored to have you with me today. Thank you.
I'm really happy to be here. Thanks for having me. And it's great to see you again.
I know, you too. And I'm just really excited to share your unique perspective. And I guess for a little bit of context, you and I, when we first got to know each other, we were doing some trainings on sexual harassment and just harassment for trainees in our program back in the day. So I just want to share that because I guess you and I bonded over difficult topics, and these are still really important topics that I know come up a lot on a daily, weekly basis for a lot of healthcare leaders and healthcare clinicians. So I'm excited to talk with you generally about training, and then who knows, we might get into some of that nitty gritty stuff as well.
Sounds good. Good memory. I almost forgot about that.
I guess it was scarred in my mind, but it was a really useful experience. And I actually still teach from what we created. So anyway, I would love to just hear a bit about your approach as a training director. I know that's what you're doing right now. So you have a lot of influence in trainees' lives. And I just love to hear what that's like for you, what that looks like as you're working with them.
Yeah, I mean, I look at my role as the level of training that I'm at. It's often a corrective experience. Graduate school in psychology can be really hard and pretty traumatic, especially for trainees of color and trainees from marginalized groups. So one thing that I've kind of made a passion of mine is figuring out ways to create a warm and welcoming environment where these trainees can like grow and thrive, where they can feel that they are getting the resources and the training that they need in order to kind of reach their next goal, process maybe some of the things that happen to them and kind of just have a corrective experience in that way. So I'm really looking for creative opportunities to train our trainees in unique topics like leadership, for example, which is something that's not really overtly taught about in our training. And coming up with ways to give exposure to leadership and help have the trainees kind of learn different ways to lead and different styles for which they might lead as well.
I love that you're thinking about those elements and really attentive to that. With my trainees in my current program, I also often see the need for that corrective emotional experience, because they'll often come in with really challenging past supervisory or training experiences, especially when there's a cultural difference. I had a couple of trainees who were not native English speakers in my last year as a training faculty. And so they had some really painful experiences. And I think it was really powerful for them to be able to also gain confidence in their training skills, in their ability to become supervisors in the future, in their clinical skills. So it's so powerful to attend to that. Can you share some examples of how you approach those leadership discussions in particular? So I think a lot of programs are not attentive to trainees' needs for leadership development skills. So I'm wondering if you could really speak to that in particular, and maybe even more so for diverse trainees.
Yeah, I'm starting from a foundation of what experiences do people have in leading, and what are their interests, and what is their understanding of what it means to lead? Oftentimes I hear that they think it's this hierarchical thing where there's someone at the top and they're kind of giving orders downward. Sometimes I hear, though, that they don't really know what it means to be a leader, and they'd like to actually learn, because where they are in their training is, you know, they're not too far away from being full-fledged staff psychologists who are going to be thrusted in a variety of leadership roles, and feeling like they've done a lot of work in other areas around where we train in psychology, right? Like intervention assessment and research, for example, and even supervision more so now, but no one's ever kind of talked to them about what does it mean to lead and how does one lead and are there models of leading? So they often just have didactics around the various models of leadership, things to kind of think about, the history of leadership and how leadership has kind of evolved from what was once kind of appreciated as the normative, kind of gregarious, extroverted, dominant-centric leadership style, versus appreciating the human nature of all of us and the humanistic side of what leaders can look like, the variety of ways that one can approach kind of moving a group along from one destination to the next. So helping them think about who they are as people, and kind of like with therapy, what modality kind of fits your personality style? Because that's probably the style that you're going to be the most effective with. And then giving them opportunities to practice these things under a safety net of staff and supervisors. So one example that I developed was a committee, a diversity committee, where we had trainees who were active leader members leading alongside staff who were staff leaders. And the goal was to kind of pair the two so that they can talk about, like, how would I report out on these things? Or how do I get volunteers to help me along with these things? And how do I set priorities and kind of program manage, move things along with different tasks? And then processing how it was like to kind of do things in different ways and get feedback on how their approach was perceived. So we've gotten a lot of really good feedback on that type of model, where trainees really love to have the opportunity to kind of claim their professional authority in that way, while consulting with someone who's safe and there to support them behind closed doors.
Oh, I love that. That's such a beautiful example, like modeling that type of leadership development. So I'm curious, who plays the role of that staff member who's safe to talk to? Is that you? Do you have other faculty members? How do you structure that?
Yeah, so with the committee that I was referring to, I was this chair, and so I had a training co-chair. And then we had different groups that worked on different tasks, and each task had a lead and then a trainee lead. And then we worked together. Occasionally it was hierarchical, but oftentimes if there was a project that one particular group was leading, they were kind of telling, help moving us along, and they were kind of more in charge. But then it also gives them the perspective of, sometimes our leadership or our work together was pretty democratic. So they learn a democratic leadership style or a hierarchical leadership style. They can learn various different ways of kind of working in this group, depending on what tasks we're kind of working on at that time.
It's really neat. And it sounds like one of the things that that does, in addition to giving your trainees this kind of experience of learning experientially, It also sounds like it highlights or relies on their own expertise and their experience or their ability to draw on their personal experiences and bring that into the professional realm, which I personally think is a really important skill.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess one thing that I sometimes see is, at least I've been involved with a few different training programs over the course of my career. And at times I have kind of gotten the clear sense that trainee experience, maybe it's not that it is not necessarily valued, but that faculty can have a hard time trusting trainees when they see the outcome as mattering or important. So like having them do something where there isn't an important outcome or it, you know, it's not going to impact the facility or the program negatively if something goes wrong. Okay, put trainees in charge of something like that. But having them be in charge of a core piece of the curriculum, I think can feel risky. For myself, I think I see it as actually really valuable. And I also see trainees as often having more expertise than I have. So that, I guess the discrepancy doesn't really resonate for me, but it is certainly something I see. Is that something that you run into a challenge within your system?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think there are definitely some topics where staff are a bit more resistant to hearing the valuable input that trainees might be able to offer. And in those instances, I kind of take a very curious approach when talking to those faculty around their concern to learn a little bit about what might be driving that. And oftentimes it's a previous experience that didn't work out well. So then helping the faculty kind of get more data about a particular trainee and how they might not be very similar to whatever bad experience they had in the past that might be driving why they don't feel as particularly trusting of a trainee. And sometimes it's a lot of work, but I think that's my role as a leader is to kind of help, you know, kind of bring people along and coaching people around alternative ways of thinking about things and finding a way to kind of see if they can get some value out of the information that the trainee might have offered.
I love that you're highlighting getting buy-in. And when you were sharing that, what came up for me is like, that's the process that I use and then teach people when I'm helping them navigate any situation where there's hierarchy. And it's more common for me currently to work with staff who are running into those kinds of challenges, like staff members who might be on the front line but want to share their expertise. So I guess I see what you're sharing about with trainees is so applicable so broadly because healthcare is so hierarchical and it kind of doesn't matter how far up the chain you go. You're always going to run into someone who doesn't necessarily trust your expertise or trust you to do something new. So I love that you're encouraging people to lead with values and be curious and just sort of explore that discomfort when they run against barriers.
Absolutely.
So how do you work with trainees to recognize their own strengths and I guess take ownership of their ability to bring their skills, their expertise into these kinds of complex, hierarchical, dynamic situations?
I mean, really kind of helping them think through what's important to them and what matters, right? Like if this is a value to them, then we have more buy-in into the work that's needed to kind of explore and kind of assess, like, how did I do? But then really modeling, right? Like, I'm constantly doing that. What is it that I'm doing? How might something that I've done, how do I think it might be perceived? How would I like it to be perceived? And constantly reflecting my own internal exploration of myself and my strengths and my growth edges. I think that creates a safe place that they feel safe to do that themselves because, you know, oftentimes trainees are thinking about being evaluated and it doesn't always feel good to say, I have something I need to work on. Because the idea is that you're always good at things. But we're all, you know, working on improving ourselves. So if I can demonstrate that I have things that I can work on and I can always do better at, then where I'm modeling that, you know, they can do the same thing and it's safe for them to acknowledge, like, you know, what they need to work on. And hopefully they'll continue to do that, which are good leaders, right? Like, we want leaders who want to continue to grow and thrive. I mean, I look at leadership as a value. It's not something that you achieve and you're done. It's something that you're continuously working and building and cultivating.
Yeah. Oh, I love that you shared leadership as a value. I think that's really beautiful. For me, something I've been thinking about a lot is leading through failure or being honest about failures. And I think for me, in a training role, that makes a lot of sense. And that's something I tend to do is share, you know, I have my own trainees watch me in the room or over video while I do patient care or lead a meeting or whatever it is that I'm doing. And then I talk through, you know, what I observed in myself that worked and what didn't work and, you know, what I forgot. And I'm not trying to be, you know, self-deprecating. I'm really just trying to point out that what I just did was not perfect and that I'm aware of that and that that is okay because showing up imperfectly is actually, it's powerful and it's also all we can do. We're never going to hit it right, you know, every single time. And that's totally fine. And so in training, I think that makes a lot of sense for me. And in developing teams, you know, I guess my perspective is that when the leader is willing to be vulnerable or to have those conversations, to self-reflect and be honest about what's not going well, I think that helps to promote psychological safety within the team because it's modeling, you know, even with other staff members or people who may have higher power level than trainees, that it is okay to make those mistakes. And I just think it's so important to start this in, you know, in training models and then keep it present as we're, you know, essentially preparing leaders to take on health systems.
Absolutely.
So I guess I'm always thinking about how do we help trainees to develop that self-awareness and then take that self-awareness with them and in a way that, you know, they feel comfortable, they feel confident in their strengths, and they, you know, they just are naturally more open to feedback. I'm curious, so you were mentioning trainees of color or trainees of diverse backgrounds. I'm wondering how you see some of these themes as being particularly relevant to those trainees, or if adaptations need to be made, because I know that when we have unconscious bias, it can sometimes lead us to think, you know, a trainee of color or a trainee of some kind of different background may be less skillful or qualified. I know for the trainees I mentioned earlier who are not native English speakers, they had often been perceived as being incompetent, which, you know, was not an accurate reflection of their skill. And I don't even think that it was, I doubt that it was a true reflection of their English language as well. I think it was like truly bias overlaid over an interaction. So I know this is kind of long-winded, but I'm just wondering if we need to be thoughtful about how we might have this kind of discussion. Like, sure, go put out your failures or be vulnerable for trainees who that might not be as safe for. That's really what I'm wondering.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. It's very true that there is a tendency or can be a tendency to look at trainees from marginalized groups, groups that are not as represented in our discipline, and make an assumption about their abilities, and also make an assumption that they need to engage and reflect and be vulnerable in a way that is equal or same to those who are from majority groups, where they're maybe historically less scrutinized, and how that scrutiny might just be, can be taxing, honestly. So highlighting that, share what you feel like sharing, and don't feel like you have to share in a large group what you don't feel like safe sharing. And training faculty to really work on cultural humility. I know in psychology, we kind of talk about cultural competence, and I think that that is important, but it can lead people to think I've achieved something. I've achieved the competence, and so I don't have to continue to work in this area, versus humility, which is we're going to continue to learn and grow regarding this area. And I'm going to acknowledge that I don't know everything, because I can't. And so I want to be sensitive to that. And so helping trainees, making sure that staff have the tools to have these kind of conversations, and at least be willing to acknowledge and notice when they've misstepped, or create an environment that might make a trainee feel that it's not as safe as they want it to be. And then also hearing from trainees that how they're feeling, and eliciting feedback about how their experience is with the supervisor, if it's a one-on-one situation where they're kind of eliciting insight development from the trainee, giving them time to, and truly willingness to hear feedback and make changes when that feedback is given to them.
So that's really powerful. You're creating a safe environment by educating and monitoring the faculty. You're giving permission to the trainees or to whoever's in lower power station to do what is comfortable for them. And then you're actively listening and getting that feedback. Do you have explicit conversations about this with your trainees?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I like to have those conversations early on in the relationship when you're building a foundation I encourage staff to do those as well. Have those conversations early on and frequent. So it becomes like a normative thing that we're just kind of talking about.
I mean, would you be willing to just kind of share, like, how do you open that conversation? I'm not sure everyone feels comfortable having this conversation. I know it can feel awkward, or it can feel intrusive, or, you know, maybe a majority or like a white faculty member might not know how to approach that. But labeling the hierarchy is so important. So how might you model that?
Yeah, I mean, I think just starting with acknowledging the topic, like, this is an important topic to me. Acknowledging where you are. I'm doing my own work to kind of work on my cultural competence, and I aspire to be culturally humble. And I love to hear from you what your needs are. How can I make an environment or this relationship something that is useful and fulfilling for you? Are there things that I need, that I should know about you and your background or your experiences that I need to consider in creating as I work to create a safe environment for you? You know, additionally, we work on having faculty mentors that trainees can choose based on match diversity characteristics. So if they have a supervisor who isn't perfect and isn't able to create an environment that the trainee feels is safe, they can identify other faculty that are safe, that they have outwardly selected, and they can work with those people to also figure out ways to address the situation that might be happening with the assigned supervisor.
And do you have a mechanism for giving feedback to those supervisors when they may be behaving in ways that are less culturally humble or less safe, less helpful?
It becomes really tricky, right? Because on the one hand, oftentimes these things are emotionally latent for the trainee, and the trainee is in a very vulnerable position where they might be needing letters of rec. And so they're balancing, how do I, you know, deal with a particular issue while also making sure that it doesn't impact my professional development and growth and navigation through my training. So I like to make sure that trainees know that I can be as safe as possible. And if I'm not, there's an alternative person that you can talk to around these things. And then learning from the trainee what they're willing to kind of manage on their own, because I want to also promote their autonomy and be able to navigate some of these things and their agency and power in the situation. And if it's a situation where they feel that they do not feel comfortable venturing into getting working collaboratively together about what is it that you feel comfortable for me to share? What is it? How would you like me to address this with the supervisor in a way that protects, that you feel like protects you? Appreciating that there are times where things are going to be so egregious that unfortunately something does have to happen, regardless of how the trainee feels. But as much as possible, as you know, low bar as the issue is, figuring out a way to kind of bring the trainee's autonomy and power into the situation, helping them kind of practice navigating, because this will not be the first or the last time that they will deal with things like that. And then when I talk with supervisors and I have permission to, being really curious, taking a non-judgmental stance, appreciating that I don't know the whole story, really trying to lean in and learn what happened, and then using, you know, my personal experience, the literature, to kind of back up some things that I'm saying regarding getting feedback around ways to kind of manage the situation. I think it's a really complex way. It's a really complex situation. It's really a tricky issue to navigate. And so I don't want to pretend that, like, my way is the perfect way and it works all the time. I think it's really challenging. And I work really hard to have rapport with all the faculty. So when these things do come up, there's a little bit of money in the bank that if I misstep, right, with having these conversations, or they feel comfortable with knowing that if they had a misstep and I'm coming to them, that it's not the end of the world, that we can really work through this. That's kind of the perspective that I take.
I mean, it sounds like you really take a developmental approach to your faculty too. And, you know, listen with curiosity and approach them where they're at. And then, hopefully help them resolve or upskill if that needs to happen. I know these situations are tricky. A few years ago, I was on faculty in a system, and I was a general group supervisor and was getting a lot of really consistent feedback from the whole crew. And I was fairly new in that system, so I was a little bit unsure what to do initially. So I just started by doing a lot of listening and then got more and more concerned with some of the feedback that I heard. And so I eventually did decide to go to the training director to bring up the feedback I was hearing. And it was unfortunately a very unhelpful experience, because that person was not able to hear the feedback that I brought and was not able to entertain that any of the concerns could possibly be valid. I think from their perspective, it was, more of like a personality influenced complaint as opposed to like something realistic, that it was a pattern across the whole cohort. So for me, that was really tricky. And so I had to essentially kind of check myself and figure out, okay, what do I need to act on? Like, is there anything ethically I have to do beyond this moment? And also checked in with the trainees, like, what would be helpful and supportive to you? And did have that conversation. And I think ultimately, they didn't want me to pursue things further. And I didn't feel like there was anything I could do in terms of like making a formal complaint or something like that. But ultimately the situation did escalate to where one of the trainees finally decided to file an official complaint with the governing body. And that complaint ultimately led to pretty significant change within the program, which was positive change. But it was just a really tricky place to be in, to try to navigate that, I think, that fine line that you were so clearly describing between what's ethical and trainee preferences and, you know, just different people and hierarchy, all these different things. So
that's really unfortunate. I'm really sorry to hear that, because, you know, in this situation, who gets hurt is the trainees. And how could that outcome been different if maybe people were open and willing to at least listen and digest that information and can investigate a little bit? Did it have to have such a big blow up at the end?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely unfortunate. And another element I think that is interesting to me is that, like, when the program was ultimately investigated, you know, specific recommendations were made, the program did follow through with those recommendations, and it actually had a pretty significant positive impact. And it's interesting for me to have watched the process because, you know, I don't know if anyone had a change of heart in the process, but policies and behaviors did change. And so even without a clear change of heart, I think that the policy impacts were really powerful. So it's really interesting. So I think for me, it illustrates the importance of, like, leaders or training directors, faculty and training programs being really thoughtful about and aware of how our policies impact our trainees or our lower status employees and their well-being. And that even if we don't, you know, agree with something or feel like something is a concern, if we can hear that feedback, listen to what's not working well from people with less power or people in a trainee position, and we make adjustments, even if we think it's, you know, unnecessary, it can really positively impact the training situation and the environment. So that, you know, that is just something that has really stuck with me, like the power that leaders have to create safety through basic actions.
Absolutely.
So I'm curious if you had any, like, systemic challenges that were really problematic to you when you started your role as training director that you decided to address and had success with. I know folks love to hear what has worked well for others.
So I can say that I assumed a role where there wasn't a lot of structure, and with that came a lot of people doing a lot of different things. I think everyone had the same goals of wanting to do right by training and wanting to make sure that they're getting feedback about how they're doing, but everyone's doing it so differently. And with that comes confusion and duplication of work and frustration on staff in some ways, because in some ways they honestly just wanted someone to tell them how to do it. They want to do the work, but they don't necessarily know how to. So coming up with some policies and procedures has been something that I've been working on, that initially I worried, given how, like, flexible and dynamic the group is that I work with, that I thought on the one hand, you know, they like to do their own thing, and then on the other hand, they actually really wanted the structure. It really gave them a sense of boundaries with their time, for a lot of them, they got back a lot of time just by having some simple policies and procedures that we as a group worked on together, right? So I didn't, you know, I'm not the type of leader that likes to always make decisions unilaterally. And so I worked with them around some of the things that I think, you know, we're all doing, but we don't have a process or a standardized procedure around. And how do we want to deal with that? And people were so excited to come up with a procedure for this and a procedure for that. And procedures that have flexibility kind of built into them, right? Where people can have some autonomy and kind of creating things in a way that works for them and their clinic and workflow, but having some boundaries and guidelines that can kind of help them with knowing where to hang their hat and knowing where to spend their time. So I think those are some of the things that I've had the most success with, and some of the things that I actually enjoy, because I like policies. I like thinking about nationally procedures and things like that. And how to translate those things into creative solutions to improving training and well-being of those that we train.
Wow. Would you give an example of like just one policy that you found was really impactful in promoting well-being?
Yeah, I think I'll say the selection. So it's not necessarily a policy, but it's a procedure. Prior to my role, there wasn't a really clear way of how do we evaluate our applicants and how do we interview our applicants and then how do we rank them. But people knew that they cared about equity and they cared about DEI components and they cared about minimizing bias as much as possible. And then also choosing who are the best candidates. So it was really easy to kind of use our competencies that we as a discipline have agreed upon, right? Our 9 competencies as like the compass for how we evaluate applications, how we interview, and then how we rank. And then thinking about our values around DEI and coming up with really clear behavioral anchors for these competencies around DEI and a rubric that matches that very clearly so that we can, when we're looking at an application, evaluate and have really concrete behavioral anchors that we're looking at, and similarly for interviews. And what I found is that, well, the process of evaluating an applicant takes a little bit longer initially because you're getting used to it. People found it to be incredibly helpful because now they know, okay, this is what I'm looking for when I'm looking at assessment or when I'm looking at intervention. This helps me hang my hat on how someone is stellar versus kind of middle of the road. I feel more confident that the things that I'm evaluating the applicants are as free of bias as like I feel like it can be in this moment right now. And we've gotten really good feedback from trainees as well about their experience of the interview process. And when they come on board, when they match with us, we bring them in behind the scenes so they can see kind of how they were evaluated and they get to evaluate applicants. And they are really appreciative that there's so much thoughtfulness that goes into the application, which is pretty big, and that they work so hard on, that people are actually looking at it in a way that's strategic and optimizes their ability to match with us.
Well, that's really beautiful. And I love how transparent your process is. I think that's so empowering for trainees and so validating when they're able to see that, learn from that, and also feel acknowledged. Like you were saying, that you really, really took a thoughtful approach to them. So I know within medical training, there are challenges with bringing in more diverse trainees, especially the higher you go in, you know, in training, keeping people from dropping out of programs, and then helping people to transition from, you know, frontline clinician to higher levels of leadership. Do you have any thoughts about that? And I'm thinking about, you know, people who work in every discipline within healthcare. Just, I think every discipline is struggling with this. Do you have any tips on how other departments or other folks could be creating that warm, safe, transparent environment so that more diverse trainees are able to actually make it through the whole training experience and then be ready to rise into those either formal or informal leadership positions?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is how's the climate? Right? And how are people measuring climate? Are you intentionally looking at the climate and asking for feedback and asking for it on, you know, maybe even multiple times throughout the training year and taking that feedback seriously and creating change, making iterative changes to the programming to kind of meet that need, knowing that it's never going to be stagnant, right? Like the goal to continuously create an environment that's safe for, or feels safe or aspires to be safe for everyone, that involves ongoing changes regularly. So kind of a commitment to knowing that the program is fluid and that there will be changes that have to happen. And then really eliciting feedback at multiple time points. And that could be through a climate survey, for example, focus groups. Those are the kind of things that I think that can be a good foundation to start with.
Mm-hmm. So really echoing those same things of building awareness, getting feedback, creating safety, and that can be applied so broadly in every kind of discipline and department. Thank you. Well, my last question for you is just what makes this work a joy for you and keeps you energized and sustainable on those hard days?
That's such a good question. I just find trainees to be so refreshing. They're energized and they haven't been beaten down by the system, so to say, so much yet. And so it's really nice to see them kind of excited because that's infectious. It's also really awesome to watch them grow and develop and come out on the other side, right? Like the training year is hard and there are times where the year feels rough. And coming out on the other side and seeing how much they've grown and hearing their feedback about how much our program helped them grow and develop. That's really what kind of keeps me energized. And it's intrinsically rewarding in that way, you know?
Oh, I love that. Yeah, honestly, I've always found that working with trainees is the highlight of my professional experience because they bring so much energy and I learn so much from my trainees, and I think it keeps me humble and nimble and on my toes, which I find fun. So, oh, I love hearing that, Nicole. Well, any final thoughts or any final tips, anything I didn't ask about that you would love to share with people thinking about trainees or promoting clinicians who are, you know, coming from diverse backgrounds or who might have historically less power in our system?
Yeah, I think the one thing I'll just leave it at is I hope that all can create opportunities and pathways for all trainees to develop leadership skills and to start practicing that early. What I've noticed is a lot of the same kinds of trainees get the opportunities, and people of marginalized groups have to really kind of go above and beyond to kind of promote themselves in ways that might actually feel like it clashes with their cultural background and development. So going out there on the limb and giving people opportunities to try things on and to learn where they kind of fit in their leadership style and what they want, right? They might not want to be at the top running the clinic. They might want to be leaders in different ways where they're doing service leadership or supervision. I mean, that's leadership, right? But I think if we're training supervisors, which is a part of our competencies, we need to be training leaders too. And those kind of things work together.
Thank you so much for highlighting that and sharing that. I really appreciate that. And thank you for all of your thoughts today. It was such a pleasure to have you, Nicole.
Thank you. This is fun.
Thank you for listening to Menders. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with a friend. And don't forget to head on over to mendinghealthsystems.com to get started creating cultural transformation for your healthcare team today. Let's create transformation magic.